Forbidden Panel welcomes you to Panelcast, Forbidden Panel's weekly podcast featuring movie and comic news and reviews. And now, your hosts, AJ and Brian.
Hey everybody, welcome to episode 60, yes, that is 6-0 of the Panelcast. You're listening to Brian.
And this is AJ. This week we're going to be talking about, well, of course, the upcoming San Diego Comic-Con, which is just around the corner. Don't cry, Brian, it's okay. Brian has some lovely things to say about Blue Water, as well as talking about, Hit Monkey, Scarlet Number One, Batman Behind the Red Hood, and a whole bunch of other wonderful things. So stay tuned, and we'll be right back with all of that after this break.
Hey, how's it going? This is Derek from Pulp Fiction and Long Beach, the world's biggest selection of graphic novels and comic books. Check out our website at www.cheapgraphicnovels.com, and you get all your graphic novels at 40% off cover price. How much?
45% off
cover. Even better than 40%. And we can ship it to you anywhere in the United States. Again, check out www.cheapgraphicnovels.com, or if you're in Long Beach, California, check us out at Pulp Fiction.
1742 Clark Avenue, Long Beach, California.
We got manga, we got anime, we got back issue comics, current comics. We'll put you on the pull list, give you a good discount. Graphic novels, figures, toys, the whole shebang. Check us out, because we rock. Pulp Fiction and CheapGraphicNovels.com. Booyah.
And we're back from our break, and we are going to go ahead and jump into some news stories for you. Because I know how much you all love the news.
Everybody loves the news.
The first one we've got up here is that we've done a few stories about some of the exorbitant prices that people pay for comic books, and we've got yet another one. Apparently, there is an issue of Detective Comics number 27, which was originally printed in 1939. It's currently up for about $450,000, which is looking to put it up there as the single most amount of money I think paid for a single issue. We had some stories before about comic book collections that sold for a crap ton of money, but this is just one single comic. I don't really know a whole lot about the old Batman stories, so I can't really say what it's about. The stories that I've read said it features something about Batman being in Hawaii, or I guess maybe.
Okay, first off, I'm going to cut you off right there before you dig yourself a deeper hole, my friend.
Okay.
Detective Comics number 27. Actually, first off, Detective Comics never started out as a Batman title. It started off originally with just different detective stories about what was going on, you know.
Well, that makes sense.
Yeah. Detective 27 was the first appearance of the Batman.
Well, that makes a lot more sense as to why it would be so expensive. I don't know my comic book history very well here, so...
That's forgivable. You're still learning, but, you should know this one. This one is like...
Apparently the reason why I was thinking it had something to do with Hawaii is because people were calling it the Aloha copy, but I guess it's because this particular copy was purchased by a Hawaiian man.
That's right.
Look what happens when you dig a little deeper into this story.
Wikipedia, man, it's not there just for looks, I swear.
I don't know why I don't ever think to look at Wikipedia when I'm looking these stories up. It just never dawns on me, but I probably should.
No, here's the problem with Wikipedia. If you're going to do, like, actual factual history, like, stuff that
right.
you need to actually use for school and stuff.
Well, you wouldn't want to use it for, like, a World War II report or something, but...
Right. No, it's absolute crap at that point, because at the end of the day, Wikipedia is user influence. It's... What users submit into the stories or into the history. So you're taking a crapshoot as to whether or not you're actually getting facts or not facts or hearsay. Now, for comic books, on the other hand, Wikipedia is the shit. You will not find any more of a better way to keep organized comics or history of comics than Wikipedia. Because
fans are relentless.
Right, because the friends – we're ruthless, dude. You post something up there that's bullshit, we're the first ones to call you out. I mean, you can't even walk down the street and say something that's bullshit without us calling on you on it. Even if you're not a comic book fan, if you just happen to mention something stupid about comic books, like, oh, Batman wears a red cape. No, go fucking stop them and correct them properly.
Or I don't know what's so special about Detective Comics number 27.
Right, and of course, I jump on your ass and I'm going to tell you that's the first appearance of Batman, you fucking douchebag. So, I mean, so comic book fans are relentless. So if there's one place in the world where you can find out for sure about a comic book, and that's Wikipedia. That's where they're 100%. I'd say, I'm sorry, 90% correct all of the time, you know?
More correct than I am.
Right. More better than Brian. That's not saying you should go to Wikipedia as opposed to listening to Brian speak on the Panelcast. No, 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 no. Just
no, listen to me talk first and then go check my facts on Wikipedia.
And then correct them. Yes. Actually, when you're hanging out with him in person, don't bother even listening to him. Just read Wikipedia instead. You're better off that way. So, yeah, that's why Detective Comics number 27 is worth so much, is because it's the first appearance of the Batman. And with the abundant popularity that the character has taken on recently, due to the amazing movies and the cartoons and the toys and all that, it makes more sense that this is going so well. Though,
plus, I understand that the particular issue itself is actually extremely rare.
Yes, yes, it is.
And this one is rated fairly decently in terms of its conditions, a 7.5 out of 10. So
yeah, for a comic book that old, I mean, it was done in when was it released? May 1939.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that long ago, yeah, to have a 7.5 is miraculous. 7.5 means it's not mint, but you got to think like 5 is average for comic books that old. That means the paper is a little like worn. The color's kind of faded, stuff like that. So to get a 7.5, you're doing a great job.
All right, well, I think that's going to wrap up that story. What do you got for us?
This one is not as exciting as that one. And here's why. Because, once again, Wikipedia has corrected me in here I thought I was a cool guy. Recently, it was announced that David Finch is to write and draw a new Batman comic book. I thought it was the director. Unfortunately, I was wrong.
Oh, David Lynch?
No, David Finch is actually...
Or David Fincher.
No, David Finch.
There's a director?
Yeah, there's a director.
Huh.
He's Canadian. He made documentaries. I thought I was cool. But no, this David Finch actually is a writer. He's done Ultimate X-Men, New Avengers, Moon Knight. He did some work... drawing on the Ultimatum and X-Men Messiah complex, all that stuff. He's mostly known for an artist as opposed to a writer. Well, anyway, it was released recently that he would be writing a new comic book called Batman the Dark Knight. Now, why is this different than any of the other Batman Dark Knight titles that you've seen out there? It's because he'll be... The Dark Knight takes Batman outside of what he knows into a world of demonology, dark arts, and mystery. He's the ultimate detective, faster, stronger, and smarter than any villain, but now he faces creatures to whom logic and mortality don't apply. David Finch was quoted as saying, "I want the Dark Knight to be true to the Batman street-level crime-fighter roots. He'll face a rogues gallery that we're all familiar with, but this book will take him into a darker path where he'll be stretched to his physical and psychological limits." I'm pretty excited about that because, you know, I'm just a huge Batman fan anyway, and it'd be nice to see a little darker side of him, see, you know, what he would do in a metaphysical realm.
Almost sounds like Batman with a little bit of Hellblazer thrown in.
Yeah, kind of like that, I'm guessing. So I'm pretty amped to see it. David Finch will be drawing and writing the comic book, so that should be pretty cool to see.
Okay, got another story here. This is another sort of depressing story. We've reported on some of these before, but we had another comic book icon die recently. A gentleman by the name of Harvey Pekar, who is probably most well known for his series American Splendor, but also did work on comics such as The Quitter. It's always unfortunate whenever somebody this legendary, especially... He's done collaborations with Frank Stack and R. Crumb, and just figured go ahead and just take a little moment to just pay our respects to the guy.
And we're done.
Yep. So if anybody wants to find out more about him, I would suggest going to wikipedia.com.
That's a fucked up way to end a morose story. Like, this guy passed away, we're sorry. Now back to the jokes.
Well, I mean, This is the panel cast you're listening to, people.
Right, right, right. I mean, you know, we do express our condolences to his fans and friends and family. You know, he was a great guy, and I'm sure he had a, you know, a huge following. American Splendor is very well known throughout the comic universe. So it's a sad day to see when, you know, a lot of our icons are passing away. So, yeah.
And he, I mean, unfortunately, he did sort of have, you know, some problems with lymphoma, which is a particularly aggressive form of cancer.
Yeah.
And, you know, ultimately it won out, but, you know, he's always going to be one of those people that stands up there as an American icon, so.
Yes, he will. And what's sad, Ryan, is I'm not laughing at this. I'm sad to follow that up, that story up with my news story. Comic-Con International will be giving out free Warner tote bags. An icon passed away this week. But you're going to get free tote bags at Comic-Con. Awesome, you know. Yeah, we should have planned our new segments a little bit better. Yeah, so anyway, Warner Brothers is putting out a tote bag for all you Comic-Con fans that will be going out there, like I will be, without Brian, you fucking douchebag.
Yeah, don't remind me.
We'll go more into Brian's douchebagginess in our next segment, but for now, we'll talk about tote bagginess. You like that, huh? That was kind of cool.
Well, they're both bags, so I guess it kind of works.
I tied the bagness together. It was awesome. Anyway, all the images of the tote bags that you will be receiving are up on our website, so if you get a chance, check it out so you can get an idea of what you want. I personally don't like any of them, but if I had to choose, I'd choose the Brightest Day one. These bags look fairly simple. I mean, they're just a bag with some art on them and a strap.
That's usually what they always are, though.
Right.
I mean, they're not really ever anything fancy.
Simple, and they don't look to be all that. I wouldn't say long lasting, but there's 125,000 collectible bags. They measure 24 inches by 29 inches, and they've been already produced and will be distributed to attendees when they check in at Comic-Con throughout the 5 days of convention, including preview night. So I will have mine in 2 days. 2 days. So I'll have mine, and I'll take pictures of me and Justin and us frolicking about the Comic-Con floor with our tote bags. So, Brian, that's all the stories I had for now. Brian?
Okay, well, let's go ahead and take a quick break, and then we'll be back with some more news.
Hi, this is Justin White with Necrosapien Press. Why don't you come down and check out the website at necrosapien.net. You can see all my latest artwork and projects, and we'll have a store up soon where you can buy prints of my art. Thanks.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Panelcast. In this segment, we're going to... It's kind of a San Diego Comic-Con-filled segment here. The first one is about the douchebaggery of one Fred Phelps. He will be down there... He will be down at San Diego Comic-Con this weekend for all of 45 minutes to protest the Comic-Con. Apparently, according to him, those that read comic books don't read the Bible, which is fracking ludicrous, in my opinion. Because I know plenty of people that do. Both. He also likens it to idolatry. And I don't know about you, Brian, but I've never been to the Church of Superman, nor have I seen the
cult. No, I was thinking about joining, though.
I've never seen any of those things, so obviously this man has done a lot of research into this, you know, where he spent a lot of time, you know, tracking back the history and seeing a lot of those different churches coming up and cults that are going on, you know.
I don't think research is really Fred Phelps' thing. I'm sure he's...
I don't think intelligence is this guy's thing. Seriously, I mean, this guy is just a media whore. He's just an attention monger. And wants nothing more than to get his name in the papers one more time. So yeah, Fred Phelps, I just want to thank you for the one good thing that you did do. Because after this article came out, our own reporter, Andrea, posted about it, and to where she discussed what her feelings were. And Andrea is a very strong Christian and very strong in her beliefs. So she was able to post about it and discuss it. Her reporting on it on our website was then reported on another site. And then reported on another site, and then on another site. So we got awesome numbers due to Fred Phelps and Andrea. So thank you, Andrea, for posting this story and your opinion. It's always great to read such a thing. And thank you, Fred, because we got some great hits on our website this past week. Thanks to you.
And everybody loves controversy.
Exactly. Thanks to you and your idiocracy. We're doing great this month. Thanks.
Yeah, and let me tell you, I could definitely fill up probably hundreds of podcasts with just ranting about this guy, and I'm not going to do that here, but it just, the whole thing is kind of ridiculous, and I think really that he's not going to achieve anything other than to give more press to San Diego Comic-Con.
Hey, he's already doing that for us. So I think he's just a media whore. He just wants all the attention and stuff. And to read more about the original story posted by Andrea, thanks to Mr. Fred Phelps, head over to our website and you can see all of our viewpoints and opinions on it, and you know, dive further into exactly what's going on here and formulate your own opinions. Brian?
Well, I've got another Comic-Con story here, and this one is about the Comic-Con contract itself, and we've had several stories about this where we've discussed what the potential future for Comic-Con could be. As we've discussed before, the contract for Comic-Con is up in 2012, at least for the San Diego Convention Center, and there's been a lot of debate as to whether or not Comic-Con is going to stay in San Diego or it's going to move. And it's looking right now that there's three cities that are currently trying to fight for the rights. That would be San Diego, of course, and then Anaheim and Los Angeles apparently also are in the bidding war.
You know, I've stated this before and I'll state it again. Keep it in San Diego. It's where we know it's at. We love it there. We love the area, the ambiance, the whole nine. I mean, San Diego really goes all out for this. I mean, how much are they making every year on Comic-Con itself?
They pull in, it's been estimated, I think it's like $163 million, just over 4 or 5 days.
$163 million that these people are making. No wonder everybody is scrambling to get Comic-Con hosted in their town. And I just cannot see it anywhere else. Anaheim has got Disneyland. Los Angeles has got Hollywood and all that other stuff. I don't see it. I like it down in San Diego. It's by the water. There's just a lot more to do than just Comic-Con. And again, it's fully immersed into the Gaslamp District. I mean, it's...
Right, and I really love the Gaslamp. I think it's kind of the perfect touch to spending the day cramped up with a bunch of people in the convention center, and then you go out in the Gaslamp and go get something to eat and just walk around and look at the sights.
Right, and you relax, you have fun, it's awesome, it's a blast. I mean, sure, it might suck for the San Diego residents, but who cares? They're getting $163 million fracking dollars, man. You know, so, I don't know. That's my viewpoint. I want them to stay in San Diego. It's close enough to home where we can run home if we really had to, but it's further enough away to warrant crashing at the hotels. You know, right. It's just... I love it, and keep it there.
Well, I think there's a pretty good chance that it is going to stay in San Diego, because the San Diego Port Commission, as we've reported, has already approved the $753 million expansion. So, and that's in dollars.
Not in pesos.
Just in case you're wondering, that's in dollars.
In dollars.
So I think the chances of it staying in San Diego are probably really good.
Speaking of which, San Diego Comic-Con, like we stated before, is coming up next week. It's coming up, starts from Wednesday, July 21st, on to the 26th, I believe it is.
Is it 20? Yeah, 26th.
I'm not going to bore or excite you with the details of what's going to happen here. Unfortunately, Brian cannot make it. Neither can Ryan.
Yeah.
And I am very sad to see two of my great friends not being able to hang out with them at this convention. But it's happening next week. If you stay tuned on the website, on our Twitters, on our Facebooks, we're going to update you with a lot of pictures daily, a lot of reports daily of what's going on and what's happening, and keep you in touch with everything. We will be participating in the Zombie Walk, not just as participants, but also as co-sponsors. There'll be giveaways for ZKS memorabilia to the best zombie in different contests that they'll be holding on. So, you know, cruise on down and have a blast. If we're we at the Gaslamp Strip Club on Wednesday night, right after preview night, it's our tradition. So you'll see me, Justin's wife, Janelle, who blogs on here, and a bunch of other Forbidden Panel people down there. So if you want to come join us for dinner, we'd love to have you, as well as Hodads on Saturday. So just come on out. And again, Brian, you'll be missed, but I will not get you any swag. I'll just take pictures of the swag and send it to you.
Okay, well, just go ahead and just take pictures of you flipping me off in various locations and with various people.
Awesome.
So I can get the full experience.
You know, I could do that right now in front of, like, In-N-Out or Baker's.
Yeah, do it in front of an In-N-Out because I really miss them.
Okay. I send pictures of Wiener Schnitzel to my buddy in Iowa all the time. They're just randomly because I'm a dick. I just like to send stuff like that. So, Brian?
All right. Well, I think that's going to do it, at least for the Blue Water one. I don't know if you have any other stories.
I do have one, and that is we wanted to discuss the... You know what? This is more of a story, so why don't we save it for the next segment? So if you have nothing else, Brian, we'll go ahead and lead off to our break and be right back.
Forbidden Panel is currently looking for artists. If you or someone you know would like to join us, please visit www.forbiddenpanel.com.
And we're back. And before we get started anything else, I can't believe that I forgot to do this, but I have a Blue Water bitch that I need to get off my shoulders.
Imagine that.
Yeah. I don't think anybody's surprised, and I'm sure you're probably all looking forward to it. But Blue Water has decided that they're going to continue shitting on comic books with their Fame series by doing another comic book about some kid named Justin Bieber or Biber or something like that.
Boober.
Yeah, whatever his name is. And this just, I think this is really kind of goes to show that the Blue Water is only concerned about just selling whatever the flavor of the month is. I mean, this is, I vaguely have an idea of who Justin Bieber is. And some Canadian, you know, teen pop star who got his start on YouTube of all places. So, I mean, that kind of makes you wonder about his staying power. And, I mean, some of their other ones that they've done, obviously things like Twilight are probably going to be around for a little while just because of the massive popularity that it has with people of all ages.
You know what? As much as I hate Twilight, I can't stand Twilight. At least it has a literary source. It comes from a book. So it has some sort of viable, thing from it. Not
right.
The characters,
well, it's something
the
that's going to be around
themselves, but maybe the storyline and the author. That I can't justify, but I can quasi understand.
Yeah, well, that's my thing though. It's just I can't understand the motivation to purchase this comic, because what sort of collectability is there going to be? For one, Blue Water, I mean, they mass print these things so much that anything that they print is going to be pretty much worthless anyway, but I can't think of a single band-related comic or musician-related comic that's ever been any sort of collectible item.
Kiss.
I guess. I mean, I've never heard of Kiss comics selling for lots of money, and I personally don't know anybody that would actually spend money on that, because I'm sure if anyone I knew ever did, I would never speak to them again.
Zach.
Well, Zach's a special case.
Awesome.
But yeah, you know, it just... This... I mean, it's who is this kid, really? I mean, he doesn't seem to have any sort of potential to be any sort of lasting musician.
No clue. I don't know what to tell you.
As I mean, even looking at like a lot of the other teen pop sensations that are out there, I mean, most of them are either not doing anything anymore, or they've moved on to other projects. They're moving away from music. They're not really, you know, doing much of anything. I mean, I guess maybe you could make an example of, like, what's his name, Justin Timberlake or something. But even then, like, he's done a few movie roles, and, I mean, he doesn't really have the impact that he used to. And this kid's going to be the same thing. And then ultimately, you know, a year from now, those comics are going to be entirely worthless. And the people that bought them are either going to really regret it, or they're just going to try to find some way to justify it to themselves.
Let's just leave it at this, and that you don't like Blue Water and they're doing stupid shit.
Okay, yeah. I'll stop talking now.
There you go. Something I was about to touch base on in the last segment, I would like to discuss now. There's been a lot of speculation and drama going around the Avengers movie in that Ed Norton has been asked to leave the cast. Why, they haven't really said, but a lot of speculation is going on about the fact that he likes to involve himself in every single project that comes out, including as far as, being interactive with the director and the role and what have you, so that he can bring forth his best performance of whatever character he's playing. And that is true in any movie I've ever seen him in. I mean, this guy fully immerses himself in. I mean, can anyone say American History X? Hello.
Right.
Very powerful actor in Ed Norton. But because of whatever drama they have, they've gone ahead and asked him to leave. Now, again, I just don't understand why Chris Hemsworth and Chris Evans. I mean, you guys are actors, and the movies I've seen you in have been pretty cool. You've done your job. But you guys are not, let's admit it, A-listers. It's just not going to happen. So you've only got Robert Downey Jr. and Samuel Jackson on there. And they're really concerned that they have all these A-listers in the movie. It's not true. Ed Norton, I think, would have been amazing in the film. And I'm sure if you would have discussed his pay rate on there, he would have backed off a little bit because he loves the character. He wanted to be in this movie. Now, let me say that again. Ed Norton, an A-list actor with tons of great movies under his belt, wanted to be the fucking Hulk in a goddamn movie. Now, how many people can actually say that? How many A-listers? Robert Downey Jr., of course he does, because his role as Tony Stark brought him back to life. You know? Samuel Jackson, right. What the fuck else is he going to do? He's in everything anyway. So...
Yeah, so, I mean, he may as well.
He may as well. they should have done what they could to keep him. I mean, hello, Marvel. Continuity? Yeah. Anyway. So...
Well, I'm sure it's not just a Marvel thing. I'm sure the movie studios probably had a lot to say in this, and as we all know, producers have a tendency to ruin everything, so...
Yes, but let's say this. Joss Whedon is the man when it comes to big cast shows, big cast movies. I mean, Serenity was the bomb.
Right.
You know, anything he can handle as far as, like, a team movie, Joss Whedon's gonna do it. So I think he would have been able to handle all of that. I just don't understand what's going on. Anyway, so basically the rumor went from him stepping down or getting kicked out or what have you to them casting Joaquin Phoenix. Joaquin Phoenix, who is retired.
Don't see it.
You seriously think he's going to come out of retirement to play the fucking Hulk? Not going to happen. And that has been since debunked and is now moved on to Mark Ruffalo. I personally like Mark Ruffalo. I think he'd do a decent job in there. But I still think that you should stick with either Ed Norton or even Eric Bana. Bring Eric Bana back. He didn't do that bad of a job as Bruce Banner. The problem with Ang Lee's Hulk wasn't Bruce Banner.
It was the Hulk.
technically, it wasn't really the Hulk either. It was fucking Nick Nolte. You know, his character and his actions and the way that it's filmed. And Ang Lee, for that matter.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, none of them were the problem. Though I personally still kind of like the movie, except for the ending. But, you know, it was Ang Lee that was the problem in that movie, and that's what happened. Hey, so if you can't get Ed Norton, fucking call up Eric Bana. He'll take it, you know? So anyway, there's a lot of speculation going on right now. Basically what they're trying to do is scramble as fast as they possibly can so they can have some sort of cast to show off at the San Diego Comic-Con this Saturday when they appear in Hall H. Warning, warning, warning. If you've never been to San Diego Comic-Con and you plan on doing anything in Hall H, show up 24 hours in advance. I'm not shitting you. I'm not exaggerating you. People camp out overnight while the party's raging on in the gas lamp at Hall H so they can get in there first the next day, especially Saturday, because guess what happens on Saturday? Brian, guess what happens on Saturday? Kevin Smith? Oh, the one guy that fucking rules that entire Comic-Con. Everybody comes out just to see him.
Yeah, it's true. It's. I mean, we were lucky to even get in the last time we went there.
And we had to get in like 3 or 4 panels before. We were sitting in the back, and we ninja'd our way up to like mediocre seating. So it's like, seriously, y'all need to get down there early. And especially now that they're doing all this stuff going, it's going to be a madhouse. So if you've never been to Hall H, check it out. So that's pretty much all the ranting I had to do about the stories going on. Brian, did you have any stories you wanted to toss out there?
No, I think I pretty much got everything out of my system.
Awesome. So, Brian, what have you read this week?
I actually have read things this week. I know, amazing, right?
I'm impressed.
And I read new stuff this week. At least some new stuff.
You read stuff that you had mentioned that I haven't read before. That's never happened.
No, I think this is it's a first in Panelcast history.
Mm-hmm.
And only for episode 60.
Yeah, that's right.
I actually read the new Brian Michael Bendis comic, his creator-owned series that just came out, Scarlet. I read the first one.
I wanted to read it so bad, I just haven't had the time.
All I've got is time right now. I'm officially a starving artist, so...
Artister,
yes. I'm officially a starving artister. But no, I read Scarlet, which is written by Brian Michael Bendis, and I believe the art is done by Alex Maleev. I'm not sure how to pronounce that. Maleev? I'm assuming it's Maleev. And this storyline, I kind of don't want to make the comparison, but it's the best one to really kind of explain what I've read of this story so far. The story is intriguing, and I really liked it a lot. It almost seems like the character is kind of like a female Punisher, but just in terms of some of her motivations for doing what she does. Essentially, as this story is getting set up, the way that it was told was kind of interesting, because it's set up as she's narrating the story to you. So there's kind of a little bit of like this like first person interaction, and then a breaking the fourth wall sort of a thing going on, which I really liked.
Kind of like the art.
Yeah, definitely like that, but without, you know, all of the wisecracking.
Okay.
But she's essentially, what she's doing is explaining her sort of like her origin story to you, which I think is kind of an interesting way to start it off, where you have the character telling you about how they got started, rather than, you know, having the first few comics just sort of show you how they got their powers and everything. So she's already been doing this, and she's relating the story to you. But essentially, she is kind of like a woman that just went through so much bullshit in her life. You know, she grew up just sort of like a typical normal girl until she started realizing that, like, there's just a lot of horrible shit that happens in the world, and some of it happens to her, and it just kind of becomes a breaking point to where she decides that she's going to go out and start fighting back. The story doesn't really delve a whole lot more into it than that in the first issue, so I'm going to keep reading this to find out where it goes, but it's written really well. I like the art style. They use this sort of like a, I don't know what this style is called, but where they use art, they like create the art based off of live models. So it almost has a kind of cel-shaded look to it. But yeah, they like the artwork is all based off of live models. I'm assuming they took photographs and then used Photoshop or something to make it look more like comic book art.
But it's good, yeah?
Yeah, it's good. And I would definitely recommend picking it up. It's called Scarlet, again, Brian Michael Bendis and Alex Maleev.
Yeah, and I'm a huge fan of Bendis. Maybe not so much of his Marvel work, but I can't argue with the fact that he writes one of my favorite comic books ever of all time, and that is Powers. So the fact that he's putting out another creator-owned comic book, it has me excited, and I can't wait to read it. Brian, you're a douchebag because you read it before I did.
I'm sorry. It'll never happen again.
It better not, damn it. What else have you read?
I also went and this one I was actually inspired to read it because of our website. I saw that you had posted a story about Hitmonkey number 2, and I was thinking to myself, wait, what the crap? How did I never hear this comic? So I went and found Hitmonkey number 1 and started reading that. And
I can't believe you never heard me. I swear I went off about it on one of the panel casts. It's
possible. I never really listened to anything that you say, so, you know.
That's believable.
No, Hitmonkey, it combines my two favorite things, killing people and monkeys. How can you not like this comic? The story is just, I mean, it's kind of cheesy, I'll say that, but I don't care. It's a monkey killing people.
Now, I didn't read the first issue, but I did read the one shot that they did where they explained his origins. So what's up with the first issue? What happens in there?
The first issue basically starts off, I guess, sort of setting up the story of how, like, there's this assassin that's going around and killing people. I believe the comic takes place in China. It's China or Japan, I can't remember which for some reason, but I'm pretty sure it's China. And essentially, like, these Asian gangsters keep having all their people killed, and they can't figure out what the hell is going on there, assuming that it's some sort of specially trained assassin, and then it turns out that it's a monkey who is a specially trained assassin. And
Hitmonkey makes me giggle. I'm sorry, go ahead.
It does. You know, it's great, too, because this is an actual monkey. It's not like a super monkey or radioactive monkey. Just a regular monkey that has the ghost of a dead assassin instructing him on what to do.
Oh, is that how it is now?
That's what I gathered from it. Hitmonkey number 1.
Let me tell you about the one shot. The one shot that they put out came out shortly after Deadpool introduced the character in his comic book, where Deadpool and Spider-Man had to fight Hitmonkey. Awesome comic book, by the way. The one shot basically gives the origins of Hitmonkey, and what happened, the origins lies in this. Originally, this assassin had gotten jacked up and stumbled upon this monkey village. I don't say village in that they had huts and shit. I mean, it's like a gathering of trees where the
monkeys... Just like a monkey clan, yeah, kind of thing.
Where the monkeys hung out, you know?
Right.
He stumbled upon them, and the monkeys kind of like just adapted them into one of their own. Kind of like Mowgli, you know?
Right. They kind of allude to some of that stuff in Hitmonkey number 1. So I think that this picks up after the one shot.
Right. Well, obviously. But, you know, so they take care of him and they, you know, mend his stuff. And anyway, so one day he's doing his chi, his kata, in his training and stuff, trying to get his stuff back. And Hitmonkey just happens to be, like, kicking it and watching him. And after watching him do these repetitive motions after a while, Hitmonkey started doing them with him. And it's somewhat basis of truth in there in that, you know, monkeys do emulate what they see, especially repeated patterns such as that. You know, so he started doing that. And then one day the people that had hurt the assassin show up in the village or gathering of trees and kill the assassin. Well, Hitmonkey didn't like that. Hitmonkey then picking up on what he had learned from watching the assassin train, gathers the guns and lays waste to all the goddamn assassins. And he just goes from there. I mean, the assassins even went as far as to kill all the monkeys in his clan, and Hitmonkey just rolls with it and becomes the new assassin. And that thus is born Hitmonkey.
Yeah. All right. Well, I'm going to have to go back and read that one shot thing, because they didn't really touch on a lot of that stuff in Hitmonkey number 1. It just really starts off with him killing a bunch of people, and then you find out that there was, like, they kind of allude to the part with the assassin ending up in this, I guess, being taken care of by monkeys, but they don't really talk a whole lot about the relationship between the dead assassin and the monkey.
Yeah, well, you need to check it. It starts off in Deadpool, and so pick up start at Deadpool and then work your way over to the one shot. I love Hitmonkey. I haven't had a chance to read the series yet. I know a lot of people are like, fucking Hitmonkey, please, that's bullshit. You know, but you can't look at it like that. You can't look at it like you're coming out of a serious comic book. It's not like he has superpowers or any of that crap. It's just,
It's a monkey that kills
people.
It's
a fucking monkey with goddamn guns. I mean, Jesus Christ. I mean, you put guns in a zombie's hand, I'm fucking all over it. You know, so do the same with Hitmonkey. Enjoy it for what it is.
Yeah, just read it for all its monkey gloriness.
Monkey.
Monkey. But Hitmonkey is, at least for this series anyway, is it's being written by Daniel Way. And art is being done by a Dalibor, I can't pronounce this, Talahic, I'm assuming. It's T-A-L-A-J-I-C. I'm assuming it's Talahic or something like that.
Your guess is as good as mine.
Yeah.
I'm horrible with names now.
You know, there's so many names, especially in the comic book industry, that are just completely impronounceable. I can't make enough syllables with my mouth to pronounce some of these names. So, yeah. But if you like monkeys at all, just pick it up and read it.
Monkey.
All right. Well, I think that'll go ahead and do it for now. We'll take a quick break and come back in with some more of the comics we've been reading.
Guys, this is Daniel Corey. I'm the founder of Danger Cat Creative Studio, and I want to tell you real quick about my upcoming comic, Moriarty, The Dark Chamber. It's about Professor Moriarty, the arch nemesis of Sherlock Holmes. I'm working with artist Anthony Diachidua on it, letterer Dave Lampier. Please go to dangercat.com and check it out. That's DangerCat.com. And please go over to Kickstarter.com. We're running a campaign right now to try to raise funds for the production of the book. So, shoot us an email, let us know how you like it, and we'll see you on the web.
Hey, everybody, welcome back to Panelcast. We want to talk about a little bit about the release that came out this week, and that would be the image of Ryan Reynolds as the Green Lantern. Brian, what were your thoughts on it?
Just based on everything that I've seen of it, I mean, it's only just the one image, but it looks pretty decent to me. It doesn't look like they went too over the top with it, like I've seen with some of the other superhero movies that are coming out. Like, it doesn't look too ridiculous. So, I don't think that they've made some changes to it, obviously, but it doesn't look like they really went too Hollywood on it.
Yeah, you know, it's again, it's a CGI suit, so, I mean, you can't really go too wrong with it. I'm glad that they went that way, and that, you know, it kind of makes sense to do it, because he's going to be in outer space a lot, and the green hue that surrounds it, and just all the special effects that will be involved in the movie anyway, it just made sense to go with this way. So I'm pretty happy with what I saw. It's just, I can't take it too seriously until I see it in action and in the film. You know, once we see it in the film and see him moving around in it and how it's being affected in that manner, then I'll be able to formulate a decent opinion about it. But until then, all I can do is stare at one image and tear it apart piece by piece if I really wanted to, or just,
right,
you know, overinflate it until it's the best thing I've ever seen in my life. You know, it just makes no sense to deal with it too much.
Well, hopefully they're going to go with the Dr. Manhattan approach to it.
No schlongs. You know.
Well, obviously, we don't want to see any giant green penises, but, you know, I just mean in terms of the way that they integrate it into the film and with the actors' movements and everything.
Right.
I mean, they did a really phenomenal job with that, so I don't see why they can't do it with this.
Exactly. I'm sorry, I'm yawning in everybody's face. I hope now everybody here is yawning, because yawns are contagious.
Nope, no yawns here.
Damn. Brian, what you got?
I did also remember that there's a webcomic that I started reading, which is, it's called Romantically Apocalyptic, and I don't really know a good way to describe this comic. It's sort of like this post-apocalyptic absurdist type comic. The artwork in it uses kind of a similar approach like I was discussing with Scarlet, where they use live actors and a combination of Photoshop and other special effects to set it up. This storyline is essentially, there's these three guys that are part of, I guess, some military that existed before the world was destroyed. It's like a post-apocalyptic setting, as evidenced by the name. But it's so just bizarre and weird that there's no real good way to describe it at all. You just have to read it. Essentially, the storyline, though, is that these three guys from the military are left just essentially wandering the world that's been destroyed. They're apparently are the only three people that are left alive. And they're all a little bit insane, especially the lead characters called the captain. And they kind of trek about in these sort of almost sort of fascist style military suits, and they have gas masks on, so you don't ever really see what they look like in person. But it's just sort of their wanderings throughout this destroyed super like metropolis kind of city. And yeah, I'm really am at a loss for words as to exactly how to describe this. I would just say go read it. I think there's 26 issues that are out now.
Do you like it?
Yeah, I like it a lot. I mean, it's just wacky and humorous, and it has a lot of really interesting elements to it, especially with the artwork for this comic is really phenomenal. I like it a lot. I mean, the guy, he uses stand-ins and actors and stuff for the characters, but just even the cityscapes and everything that he paints, it's really, really dark. It really sort of has this kind of oppressive, apocalyptic feel to it. Like a lot of apocalypse-type stories that I've read in terms of webcomics, you know, they show the buildings all destroyed and everything, but this guy really kind of captures that sort of, like, just really dark, oppressive, apocalyptic kind of scenario, and then pairs it up with this just really bizarre, absurdist type humor to the point where, I mean, the characters in this comic are obviously unbalanced. You know, I'm assuming that it's been literally years, maybe even decades since this happened. Most of the bodies and everything they find are decayed beyond recognition, and most of the technology and everything they find is really just, you know, broken down to the point where it's unusable. And so it just, I don't know, this is one of these comics where it really kind of threw me a loop for exactly what to say to it, but I want to tell everybody to read it because it's good. And it's funny, and it's strange, and it's bizarre, and it's really right up my alley. So I don't know how to put it better than that.
Cool. I will have to check that out.
But don't be prepared for any of it to make a whole lot of sense, because it's some of them you'll read it afterwards, and you just kind of sit there and go, what the fuck? I really like that, but I don't understand what the hell just happened.
Well, you know, I think that half the time with our conversations, so.
Yeah, that's true. We do kind of get off on some tangents.
Quite often.
All right, well, I think that's going to wrap it up, at least for everything that I've read this week.
Okay. I want to... how do I put this? Share with you about Batman... Excuse me. Batman Under the Red Hood. This it's a new animated movie that they put out. DC recently put out, and it's the shit. I'm gonna have to say it's fucking awesome. It's up there as one of my favorites of all time. for those of you that are unfamiliar with the story of Under the Red Hood or who the Red Hood is, I'm going to absolutely spoil it for you right now.
Spoiler alert.
The Red Hood is a character inside the DC Universe that is basically one of the antagonists for the Batman character. You start off without realizing or knowing who he is, and so it grows into a big shocking surprise when you finally are revealed as to who exactly the Red Hood is and what his intentions are. You've recently seen him in the... Battle for the Cowl storyline that came out a couple months ago in the Batman comic books, and where a lot of different people were vying for the title of the Dark Knight when the Batman disappeared or passed away or whatever he's doing right now, when he Captain America himself into time. So this movie picks up and tells a bit of the origin stories of where the Red Hood came from and who he is. I'm just going to give it away right now for those of you who don't know or don't care. Jason Todd is the Red Hood. And in case you're wondering who Jason Todd is, he is the second incarnation of Robin. He is the Robin that was killed by the Joker in Death in the Family. Why? How could he be the Red Hood when he died? Well, you know, it's comic books, so you can expect these people to come back.
Yeah, they can bring anyone back.
They can bring anyone back. And it's very foreshadowed by the beginning of the movie where it opens up to the Joker. It opens up to Jason Todd as Robin being tied up and bound and left on the floor, and the Joker beating the ever-living shit out of him with a fucking crowbar, which, if you read the Death in the Family, you know that it's taken exactly from the comic books. Joker walks away, the fucking place explodes, and Batman finds Jason Todd's dead body. So Jason Todd was actually considered by many as the worst Robin ever to exist. When Death in the Family came out, they decided to put a poll, a phone number poll, on the back of the comic book to where you could call in and vote on whether or not he survives or dies in the next issue. It was unanimously decided that he would die. Unfortunately, it came out many years later that it turns out that one person had programmed his computer to call that phone number 5,000 times in order to get the vote to kill off Jason Todd. He just hated them so much. So they really never really got a decent read on whether or not they liked the character or not. But since his return as the Red Hood, he's gotten phenomenal responses. But so it's arguably Jason Todd is one of the worst Robins of all time, depending, you know. As the Red Hood, though, he's rocking it, and that's what this cartoon shows. It's violent, man. This thing, you finally understand in the animated universe why the Joker is indeed Batman's nemesis. He is a complete fucking badass in his complete and utter psychoness. That is the Joker. You see him performing feats that you finally understand, again, why he's the number one enemy. The Red Hood is vicious and violent, and there is a lot of death. There's a lot of blood. And there's just... Words can't describe it. This fucking cartoon is the shit. And they did a great job with that. I'm surprised that Warner Brothers put this out. Or DC put it out. It's just that high-end and that adult. You know, so if you haven't had a chance to check it out, please do. I need somebody to geek out with it about, you know, with. So go watch it. Brian, why the fuck haven't you watched it yet? Why did you Brian yourself on this goddamn movie? Dang.
Hey, I thought I did pretty good with the comics, at least.
Hey, well, I gotta give you that one.
Get off my back, man.
I'm off of it. So yeah, Batman Under the Red Hood has just been released this past week by, again, Warner Brothers and DC Comics. It is a awesome, awesome movie. Please check it out. Let me know what you think. So that's going to do it for this segment. We'll go ahead and take a break and be right back.
Hi, I'm a chick. And I read comic books and play video games. And yes, I am attractive. And whenever I need new information, I head over to Forbidden Panel and look for new geeks to seduce. And I'm sorry.
Okay, we're back. And we're going to go ahead and close this out here. I just wanted to take the time to thank everybody for listening to episode 60. I appreciate everybody that's been with us since number one. I also want to ask you guys to just go ahead. I'm sure most of you probably already on there, but for those of you that are not or just discovering us, go ahead and check us out on Facebook. We've got both the Forbidden Panel on Facebook as well as our zombie comic ZKS. Also, follow us on Twitter as well.
That reminds me real quick, everybody. Thank you for all of your ZKS submissions. The submissions that are coming in are fucking phenomenal. Keep up the good work. You have out until August 12th for the deadline. Sorry to interrupt you there, Brian. But, dude, the quality and stuff that's coming in right now, I am just super impressed. You guys are doing an awesome job, and you make me feel all giddy inside that, you know, you're trusting us with this work, and our work inspires you to do all this stuff, so.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, because I get the forwards on all of the submissions that come in, so I get to see everything. And yeah, you guys are doing a really fantastic job. And I mean guys in the gender-neutral sense.
You peeps.
Yeah, you peeps. You people out there, you artisters. Keep sending them in. I really am enjoying everything that's sent in, and I'm really excited to see who's going to win this contest.
Yeah, so am I. There's a zombie dog!
Yep, we got one with the zombie dog, so yeah, get as creative as you want with it.
Indeed.
We also have one other announcement. There's going to be a special announcement on our website on Tuesday, so be sure you guys come and at least follow us on Twitter, because you'll get all of the website updates there, or follow us on the Facebook, or just come to our website on Tuesday. We've got a special announcement for something that's happening with Forbidden Panel, and you probably don't want to miss out on that.
I'm very excited for this.
Yes, I am too. It's quite exciting. All right. Well, I think that's going to wrap up all of the announcements that I've got, unless you've got anything else that I've missed.
You know what, everybody? I just want to thank everybody for tuning in. You guys are consistently amazing and impressing me and making us feel good that we're doing this whole podcast, comic book, movie review site type thing that we got going on here. It's nice
to be... It's true. Despite any of this other, you know, crap that's going on, Forbidden Panel is the one thing that consistently makes me feel good about myself, and we've got you guys to thank for that.
Exactly. So thank you guys all for tuning in and being a part of that. Thanks to all the people that have been inputting on the website lately, all of the new members. We know you're here because of Andrea, but we don't care. We'd like to think that it's because of us.
It doesn't matter where you come in from. We still want you here.
Yeah. Thanks for coming in. Thanks for all the new posts and all the new traffic and conversations that have been happening on the website. We appreciate everything that you guys are doing, and the fact that you tune in and visit us on a daily basis. We are racking in the hit counts, and that makes me very proud every single day. So thanks again. Make sure you check out the banners on the bottom of the webpage. Visit our friends. They need your help too. They are very interesting and fun people. We want to throw a shout out to John. John, you're in our thoughts. We hope everything is going great for you. John's father recently passed away, and he's you know, he's dealing with it and the best that he can. So if you want to see any amazing work from John, check out his website, drawhard.com, as well as his DeviantArt page. He is now taking commissions for work. He needs the help, people, so head on over there and check him out.
All right. Well, I think that's going to do it for episode 60. So go ahead and just say thank you, everybody.
Yep. Good night. We'll see you next week. Stay tuned. Check in the websites and the Twitters, people, because not only is a special announcement coming up, but all the Comic-Con goodies will be there. And next week, we'll be back with all the interviews and all the wonderfulness that's going to make Brian cry like a little girl.
I'm already crying inside.
And on the outside. Thanks, everybody. We'll see you next week.
Panelcast is brought to you by Forbidden Panel. Please visit us at www.forbiddenpanel.com.